chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm delighted to have Carrie Newhoff on the show today. Carrie is a best-selling leadership author, speaker, podcaster, former attorney, and church planter. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. So, Carrie, I cannot even tell you how delighted, how humbled, how honored I am today that you're making the time to be on the Something Extra podcast. I so appreciate this.
Well, it's a thrill to be with you, Lisa. Thank you very much for having me.
And I told you, we've got so much to talk about.
We do.
I have to first give a shout out to our mutual friend, Lance Witt. I love Lance Witt.
Isn't he great?
Just deep and humble. And, you know, I love his book, Your One Life. But I also love your book. I told you, I had been reading your book, At Your Best, and then figured out that Lance knew you. And I said, can you please ask Carrie to come on the show? Because I absolutely love it. But yeah, I just want to tell our audience, I'm sure people know you, but for the one or two who do not, Carrie, I'm going to read just a little bit here. I mean, you've done so much. You're a best-selling leadership author, speaker, podcaster. You're a former attorney. And I think I even read somewhere where you started your own radio show or something when you were like 16.
I did. I walked into a radio station at 16 and got hired and then created my own show. So that was a lot of fun.
So what did you know about creating a show when you were 16 years old?
I joined a local radio station in a small town of 12,000 people. So you can imagine how good it was. And this was in the 1980s. And they gave me the dead shift. And the format of the radio station had terrible ratings. And it was clear to me, even at 16, why that was because the music was awful. I asked them for the ratings and they're like, oh, here's the book. And I said, there's no numbers here. There's just lines. And they said, lines are for when it's so low you can't measure it. So they gave me the slot with lines. So I basically had no listeners. And I thought, well, I'm going to change that because the music is terrible. I was 16, so I liked all the music that teenagers like. So I discovered that they had all these great records. They just never played them. I started breaking format, breaking the rules, and just playing good music, figuring that nobody, you know, who worked at the radio station was listening because we had lines. And then I told my friends about it, and we went from the bottom of the heap to the number one show on the radio station when I was 16. So,
what a story.
And then by the time they found out what I was doing, the show was so successful, they couldn't stop me because sponsors wanted on and everything. And so, yeah, there were some of my coworkers who were not very happy that that happened. But, and my bosses were kind of mad, but then they were like, well, I guess the kid gets some credit because he actually has the number one show on the radio station. So, but the music was terrible. So it's like, no wonder nobody was listening. I just played good music.
So you had a little entrepreneurial spirit, a ton of creativity, a lot of smarts about you, you know, to figure that all out. What a great story. I love that.
And a bit of rebellion too, which I'm trying to harness.
Yeah, yes.
For sure. But doesn't every leader?
Yes. Well, you have to have a little bit of that. You know, it's that old adage, you know, we've always done it this way. Well, you know what? Let's shake things up a little bit, right? You got to continue to do that. You speak to leaders all over the world about leadership. This just blows me away. Your leadership podcast has 18 million downloads. It's amazing. You're doing a lot of things right, obviously. So you've started this radio show, but then you were an attorney. You've been a church planter. You've done a lot of different things, Carrie. I love that about you. I mean, there must be something in your personality that wants to create, for one thing, and believes that you can do these things, right?
I think so. You know, a few years ago, somebody sat down with me who does sort of life plans, life reviews, because a lot of it doesn't really hang together. You know, what does radio have to do with law, have to do with ministry, which I did for 2 decades, have to do with what I'm doing now, podcasting, writing, speaking. And the common thread through it all, and I didn't really think about it until after, was communication. Because when I was in law, I loved the courtroom side of law. I loved getting up there and trying to persuade a judge. I loved the on-air part of radio. And my favorite part of my job as a preacher for 2 decades was preaching. And now what am I doing? I'm writing, speaking, that kind of thing. So yeah, there's a communication thread through all of it, but it seems like I love change. And every 3 to 5 years, I throw a bomb into whatever I'm doing and blow it up and see if something new comes out of it, you know, that keeps it fresh. So at this stage of my life, it was 40 years ago that I walked into that radio station. I'm in my mid-50s. That's crazy. That sounds like a whole other era. But this is so fresh and I'm enjoying it so much. And I think part of that for me is the consistency coupled with the change. In other words, I'm still doing communication. It just gets a new skin every once in a while, which I would think as a person of faith is also part of my calling too, right? A renewal of that.
I love that you tied that all together. You know, there's always probably a common thread. Well, a couple, and I really want to get into your book, but a couple of your blogs that I read that I think you recently wrote was how to get people to follow you when you don't know where you're going. I bet you there's some leaders that could resonate with that.
Yeah, I work with a lot of church leaders and a good number of business leaders. And I think church leaders got hit harder than maybe business leaders did, like restaurants reopened and gyms reopened and all the ones that were hit hard. You know, grocery stores are at full capacity. And in America, that happened very quickly, particularly depending on the state you're in. So there wasn't a lot of disruption. But in the church world, there's a lot of leaders who realize that even though their church is open again, people aren't coming back. And I have a theory on that. Crisis is a disruptor and an accelerator. So it disrupts everything. And then it also accelerates change. So for example, in the world of work, a lot of knowledge workers now run hybrid companies. They have office workers in the office and they have people who work from home and people who come in once a month, once a week or whatever. That was coming in 2030 anyway. By the time we got to 2030, work probably would have looked like this. It just got here in 2021, 2022. But what we saw, I think, is the acceleration of post-Christian America in the last 2 years. And America also, and Canada and other countries got a lot angrier and more divided. So it left a lot of pastors struggling. And what I suggest in that post, if I remember it correctly, it was a few months ago I wrote it. But what I would say just off the top of my head is the best thing you can do when you don't know where you're going is to go back to your vision. Why did you start this in the first place? What are you really all about? And then once you figure that out, like it's the vision that really rallies people to the center. And probably your strategy is broken. Like we've done church the same way for decades. So maybe we should rethink that. Maybe hybrid church is okay, online and in person. Maybe you should look at distributed gatherings. You can reconfigure the method as long as you accelerate the mission. But the problem with a lot of us as leaders is we're more wedded to the method than we are to the mission. We would rather do the restaurant the way we've always done the restaurant, can't understand why Gen Z doesn't like it that way. We will always do church the way we have always done church, but we can't understand why nobody's coming anymore. So I think you reclaim the mission. People ask me, will you always do podcasts? And the answer is no, I have no idea what the future holds. And I'm not committed to podcasting. What I'm committed to is I want to bring high quality conversations with people of consequence to my audience. I don't know what that's going to look like in 5 years. If it's high quality, long form conversations, which I think will have a place in culture moving forward, then we can talk about the different forms. Right now, podcasting works. I mean, 20 years ago, you would have had to have millions of dollars and owned a TV or radio station in the old media to be able to do that. And you wouldn't even do that because they had commercial breaks and interruptions and all that. Well, I can go 90 minutes, 2 hours with a guest, no interruptions. And you know what? When you do that, they tell you things you never hear on TV or on radio because they're like, well, hang on just a second. Hang on. We're going to commercial. We'll be right back. And then we're going to talk about, well, you get it in 4 minute, 8 minute sound bites. And I love the long form dialogue that podcasting offers.
Oh, I do too. It's been just a great joy, but I'm with you. I mean, you know, the world will change. So the important thing is we need to change with it, right? So, but a couple of things that you said in here that I'd love to camp out on for just 1 minute. You said, what can help when you don't know where you're going? Here are five things. Maintain a non-anxious presence. That is so important. With what we've gone through in the last 3 years, our people are looking to us. And if we are anxious, then that's going to trickle down into our people. So in fact, you say people are looking for leaders, for a lack of a better term, hinged. And I never heard that before. What do you mean by that?
Well, most of us become unhinged. So I kind of made that up. Like we want to be hinged, not unhinged. And the non-anxious presence idea comes from a rabbi, Edwin Friedman, a number of years ago. Another leader I follow, Steve Cuss, said, anxiety spreads in a room. So what will often happen is if you have an anxious person in the room, that anxiety is contagious, almost like a virus, right? And so you get one worked up person, everybody gets worked up. And it's pretty clear that none of us really knew what was going on, especially in 2020. And I think one of the secret scripts of leadership is most of us are making this up as we go along. Do I really know what I'm doing? I don't really know what I'm doing. Like this was a hobby a decade ago. I started writing and then I started the podcast just because I enjoyed it. I didn't expect 20 million downloads. I didn't expect, you know, a website that gets accessed millions of times a year by leaders around the world. Like I didn't expect that. So what I had to do was I had to build a company. So now there's a team of nine of us and we do this because I can't do it all myself. And then, you know, we blew up our business model recently too, because we saw that what we had been doing for 3 or 4 years was starting to level off. And before it leveled off and before it went into decline, we said, okay, we're going to do it a different way. And we blew that up. But honestly, most of us know this, right? Like even if you're in the C-suite, you're like, how did I get here? You know, unless you really have an ego problem, you kind of go like, I feel unqualified. I feel like I'm a bit of an imposter. And that's normal. But I think what you have to do is just say, okay, we got here. We're going to get out of this. I'm a person of faith. I believe God has a sovereign plan for the world, even though it doesn't look like it most days, and for our lives. And so what I can do is I can be calm. I'll give you a very practical example because that sounds very ethereal. You know, I've been learning financial principles over the years, and we bootstrapped our business. And we always believed in a cash reserve because you got to be prepared for a rainy day. Well, in March of 2020, it rained, it poured, it stormed. And when everybody was laying off, I sat down with my CFO, went over all the financials, saw that we had a cash runway that could extend into the fall. And I called all my team together via Zoom. We'd been on Zoom for years because it's a virtual company. And I just said, nobody's getting laid off. All right, we're going to figure this out. I don't know what's going to happen. The bread and butter of our business is core sales. I don't know whether anyone's going to buy a course or not, but we got cash in the bank. Nobody's losing their jobs. Well, everybody just relaxed and they all kind of leaned in. And then we tried to figure it out and we pivoted and like everybody did and we innovated. And we said, well, let's do a free course. So we did a free course. And then 15,000 people took that free course. It was amazing. It was a real gift. I shot it on my iPhone because you couldn't even have a crew in to shoot it. And then we said, okay, well, let's shoot another product that we called the 30-Day Pivot. So we shot that course, again, very low budget, but let's get that out to market. And we don't know what the market is. So we tested it and we said, we'll make it $77, like almost free. And it sold like crazy. And then we're like, okay, now we can figure out what about our regular courses, which are usually at the $300 or $400 mark. Well, there was a market for those too. So we figured it out, but we had that. And I think that lack of anxiety, was I nervous on the inside? Sure, but anxiety spreads. And so we were able to assure the staff, get everybody leaning in. And I'm really proud of what the team did in those first few months of the pandemic, because a big chunk of my income was speaking. And of course, that got shut down. I live north of Toronto. The border was closed for 18 months for all intents and purposes. So that got wiped out. So we pivoted to virtual. With that kind of thing, you can get to innovation pretty quickly. But if you're freaking out and your hair's on fire, your whole team is going to feel that. And some of them will say, I got to jump ship. I got to leave. This is too stressful for me. And people have stressful enough lives too. So you want to maintain that non-anxious presence.
Yeah, I've got a friend, Dr. Jason Selk, and he wrote the book Relentless Solution Focus. And he says, you know, when you've got something like that, you get that negative thought, because you could have gone down there, Carrie. You could have completely gone down that road of being anxious and going, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? You know, all these speaking engagements. But leaning in and saying, nobody's going to get laid off. There is a solution here. You get to that solution. Dr. Selk says, get to that solution. What is the one thing you can do? You get to that in 30 seconds, you know, and start down there, because there's always a solution. So that's a great story. I love that.
You know, and I was running a digital company, and it's like, if a digital company can't figure this out, there are probably real issues. So we got to take our expertise that I had learned in building a virtual company over the previous 5 years, 6 years. And I got to then share that with leaders for free. And then eventually we figured out the new economics, which were honestly not that different from the old economics. But I saw restaurateurs pivot, gym owners pivot. I saw all kinds of people just start to innovate. And what saddened me, churches innovated for a while too. But then as soon as the building reopened, went back to business as usual and got diminishing returns. And so I think the key, and this is what we did, we went on a retreat, because the bread and butter of what I do, most of what I give away is free, but the part that's paid pays for everything. So it was course sales, and we got to market early on online course sales, but we could start to see the growth curve level out a little bit. And so what we did is, instead of now giving away one course for $347, $400, whatever the price point was on that particular course, we're giving away all of our courses for $397. It's like, what? And when I first heard that, I'm like, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And then we really leaned into it, and we did the economics, and we did a deep dive into our analytics, and we discovered that most people buy one course, not seven. And that if we can go to an annual membership and then add community and some live coaching and combine some other things we can do, we will make up for in quantity what we're going to lose in per capita sales. In other words, if we could get thousands of leaders into this, and we're well on our way, this is a very, very recent change for us, all we need to do is get a few thousand leaders into this, and we're ahead of where we were before. So we tried that, and away we go. You've got to keep innovating. You got to keep changing. Otherwise, you kind of lose it. And so one of the lessons of the pandemic, well, long before the pandemic, is you either disrupt yourself or you get disrupted.
Absolutely.
You know, because culture is changing whether there's a pandemic or not. Just ask the hotel industry. You know, they didn't give permission for Airbnb, and the taxi industry didn't welcome Uber, and they got disrupted, and they didn't need a global crisis to do it. Innovation happens all the time. So you've got to stay ahead of the curve for that to be able to do that. And I think the pandemic forced us all there for a moment. And then when we opened up, a lot of people were just like, we'll just go back to business as usual.
No, I could not agree more. We have to continue to look around the bend for your organization and make sure that you are headed there and reinventing. But you also have to reinvent yourself as an individual too, Carrie, and be open to that change, right? So I always say, I'm not in competition with other people, Carrie. I'm really not. I just want to be in competition with myself. I just want to be a better version of me today than I was yesterday. So you were just kind of talking about what you guys are doing. Is that the art of the Leadership Academy?
We just launched that. And the whole idea is, it's everything, all of our paid products, premium, for $397 a year. So because you have a lot of business leaders, it's a membership model rather than an a la carte model. You can still buy a course a la carte if you want, but why would you pay $400 for one thing when you could pay $400 for everything and get community? We started iterating this about 6 months ago. And the more we thought about it, the more we needed to add community. And so we have, quote, community on social, and we have community. We had it on my website, but we redid our whole website too. And I took comments off my blog. And that was a really big decision, because I've had them for years, and we had hundreds of thousands of people commenting on the blog, which was awesome. But it was also terrible, because the trolls would show up. We also are watching how social media is changing. You know, there was a time not too long ago where the algorithm didn't control what you saw. Your feeds were sequential on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. It's just like you scroll down, you saw what your friends are doing, but now the tech companies are deciding what you see and what you don't see. So we invested quite a bit of money in the academy, and now we have sort of an equivalent, not really of our own social media inside, but basically a dialogue between peers and mentors. So I recruited 40 top shelf leaders, and they're leading the dialogue along with me. And then you get colleagues in business, colleagues in the church world who are connecting with each other, who are learning from each other, who are answering questions. And you get to basically choose what you see. We are not controlling that. There's no algorithm in there. So you're allowed to connect with people the way you're supposed to connect with people, like you used to be able to do on social, but is really hard to do right now. So we're very encouraged by the quality of the dialogue. And because it's a paid service, you don't get the trolls. You don't get the people who have nothing to do except scream in all caps on the comment section on your website or anything. So it's a higher elevated dialogue with qualified peers and trusted mentors. Plus it's all the content, plus some live stuff we do inside the academy. So yeah, that's all available at theartofleadershipacademy.com.
Oh my goodness. Your content is just really rich. It's really incredible, Carrie. You said as a leader, you had the drive in the heart, but are you the leader that others need you to be? Are you and the people that you lead, are you truly thriving? And that is why, you know, something like this is so important. And I would really encourage our listeners to go check it out. Well, we do need to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with Carrie Newhoff.
Are you a rising IT leader? Could you benefit from a network of like-minded peers? Let me introduce you to the St. Louis Technology Leadership Experience. This one-of-a-kind program gathers cohorts of IT professionals for three workshops: peer small group problem solving, one-on-one mentoring by IT executives, and multiple networking events. You'll be prepared for your next steps as an IT leader by gaining core leadership competencies and a strong, powerful network of peers. To apply for our next TechLX cohort, visit tpi.co/TLX.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Carrie Newhoff. So, Carrie, we still have so much to talk about, and we'll try to get a little bit. But I told you I had read this blog that just really touched me. I was like, man, I should have read this 30 years ago. And it's really the five temptations that a parent, you know, a spouse, a business leader can really fall into. And the first one that you said is sometimes you're tempted to lead better at work than you are at home.
I am. I'll tell you that. Things have changed for me a little bit. My life is kind of on a hinge point. When I was around 40 years old, I had a period of burnout, and it almost took me out. It didn't. I'm very grateful. I haven't burned out since, but that was a hinge point in my life. And the pain was so deep, it really made me look deep. But, you know, in my 30s, I had left law. I was leading a church. It became the fastest growing church in the country, one of the largest in our denomination. And that's intoxicating. My marriage at the time was not in the best shape. And I had two boys, right? So they were maybe 10 and 6 at the time. I would be at work and you're kind of the hero and you get a lot of respect and people do what you want and you get results. And then you go home and it's like, don't have the same respect. It's like, go do the dishes or, you know, help out with dinner or grab him or change a diaper or whatever it happens to be. And it's just easier to stay at work. And I found myself falling into that trap and not knowing how to deal with the problems in our marriage at the time. I would just bury myself in more work. And the laptop is, you know, an invention that just makes that so easy. Because even if though I had an office at the office, I would come home and just pop up with my laptop and disappear from my family. And you know what? That's wrong. You know, my wife and I have since gotten into a much better place in our marriage. The relationship with the kids has been repaired and restored. But yeah, I have to remember, and that's very intoxicating, even for me at this stage. My kids are grown, they're independent. But you know, on a day off, you can feel totally useless, like fall into productivity shame.
Yes.
And you don't realize that you actually have value, that from my faith perspective, God loves you for who you are, not what you do, not what you accomplish. And that life has meaning beyond what you produce. And I'm a producer. That's what I do. That's what I've done with my whole life, right? So yeah, it's a challenge. And I just have to remember home is actually more important than work. The way I think about it now is if you're winning at work, but you're losing at home, you're losing. period.
Such good words of advice. I mean, you've got some great content there about that and tempted. You already said letting your marriage slide. And the thing you say is one of the best gifts you can give your children is a great marriage, because they need that security and they need to see you loving one another more even than possibly you even love them.
If you make your marriage better now and you start repairing things and maybe you ask for forgiveness from your kids or whatever that is, they will remember it. Some of us have older parents, and I want you to imagine the scenario where your 80-year-old father says, you know what, I've been a jerk a lot of my life. And I haven't treated your mother well, and I haven't treated you well, and I want to ask your forgiveness, and I want to let you know I'm changing. Like, that would melt just about every heart of every child alive today, even if that child is in their 40s, 50s, 60s, right? Like, we want that from our parents, so it is not too late. Even if your kids are almost grown or in college or you have grandkids, it's not too late. Fix it. There's hope.
You know, it reminds me, Carrie, of that great C.S. Lewis quote that says you can't always change where you start, but you can change the ending. And I think even modeling what you just said to your children, because listen, they may be there too. They may get to that point too where they've messed up and they need to know that there is restoration that can happen. And being a model of that, I think, is really important.
No, I completely agree with that. And, you know, you are kind of the anchor or the unstable place in a family's life. And your challenges, but also your successes, ripple into the next generations. So pay attention to that.
That's a good word there. Well, I'm so excited. I want to get into At Your Best. We're just going to hit the tip of the iceberg here, but I think this is going to resonate with everybody, Carrie, how to get time, energy, and priorities working in your favor. I think that's going to resonate with every listener. You know, I love your dedication page, and I had to just read this. It's to my grandparents, Garrett and Greta Knapp, who had all the time in the world for me.
They're really special people. They immigrated from Holland. Neuhof is Dutch. They never amounted to much in the world's eyes. My grandmother cleaned houses and maybe stopped that around 50. And my grandfather, he worked in a greenhouse. He was treated very poorly as a man in his 40s and 50s, trying to make a way in a new country, but then eventually got a job as a janitor. And that's where I learned from him. Dignity and pride can come in any position. If you're cleaning toilets, if your hands are greasy and you're delivering, he was in the tool and mold industry, molds, that there's dignity in that. And what I loved about going to their house, and I would spend a lot of time at their house, is that time just had a different sense. There was no rush. There was no hurry. They always had time for me. There was always ice cream in the freezer. And I realized that I'm kind of wired differently than that. And I'm go, 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 go. And God is beating a lot of that out of me as I get older. And they were really, really special people. And I imagine most of us had somebody in our life like that. Maybe it was a teacher who pulled you aside after class, or a coach who took a special interest in you, or a neighbor who said, come on over, I just made some cookies, or whatever that was. Like, we got somebody like that. And I'm like, wow, you guys are my hero, because it's a rat race. And as Ken Blanchard says, even if you win, you're still a rat. Like, who wants that?
Well, I'm going to preface this. So, you know, there was a Gallup study where they took 7,500 full-time American employees. 70% of these people in their 20s and 30s were experiencing some sort of burnout. And you've already alluded to, you went down that road. But the good news is you got to the other side. And when you got to the other side, I think you were polling different leaders that had been successful, and you found out a few things. You said you studied top performers. They were highly focused on managing not just their time, because time is really important, but you got to manage your energy, because let's face it, we all have limited energy as well.
Yeah, well, you have 24 equal hours in a day, Lisa, and we all know that. But I think we also intuitively know that those hours don't feel equal. So for me, I happen to be a morning person. I'll get up anywhere between 4:30 and 6 most days. I don't set an alarm anymore. Just let my body do the work, because sleep is important. There's a world of difference to me between writing at 7 a.m. and writing at 7 p.m. At 7 a.m., I'm in a state of flow. The words are coming easily. I'm in a good mood. I'm ready to go. I'm charged. At 7 p.m., not much good happens in my life anymore. Like, I'm good for watching an episode of Yellowstone or hanging out in the hot tub or going for a walk, but that's about it. That's all I got left in me. And I encourage leaders to divide the day into three zones: green, yellow, red. Really simple framework. Green, when you're at your best, hence the title of the book, At Your Best, right? And for most leaders, and I did quite a bit of research into this, believe it or not, we only have 3 to 5 of those hours a day. I want to think, because I'm so driven, I'm a robot, I have 17 of those hours in a day. The other 7, I'm sleeping. No, that's not true at all. You don't have 17 prime hours in a day. You have 3, and on a good day, maybe you have 5. So my peak hours are generally between 7 and 11 a.m. And then on a good day, between 1 and 2, I can sort of recapture some of that energy after lunch and maybe a nap midday, then boom, I'm back at it. But most days it's 3. And you're like, wow. And then your red zone is the opposite. We all have a couple hours, usually in the afternoon for a lot of people. Some say it's after lunch. For me, it's between 4 and 6, where you have 3 brain cells left. You're exhausted and you either need to go work out or take a nap. You got to move your body or take a nap, or Red Bull if you're stuck in meetings, one of those. And that's your red zone, where you're exhausted. You try to answer emails. You can't even compose a sentence. And then everything else is yellow, which is actually relatively productive time. And so the secret of using your energy is to do what you're best at. What is the stuff that moves the needle in your organization, right? You run your company. Like, I know for me, if I'm producing great content, if my team is aligned, and if we have the resources that we need to do what we're called to do, then my company is going to be okay. So those are some of my 3 biggest priorities. I need to do those in the green zone. I need to do those when I'm at my best. So because my time is morning time, as a rule, I've cut out breakfast meetings. Because I'd go to a breakfast meeting, you meet at the restaurant at 7 a.m. You're supposed to be done at 8, but it goes to 8:30. You know how that goes. And then you're saying, oh, I should grab some coffee. So you go to a drive-thru. Then you get into the office, chit-chat, sit down at your desk. It's 10 a.m. You're like, oh, I got 5 texts and 17 emails. Da-da-da-da. Then it's lunch. What did you get done? Nothing. And then you bring the big project home. In my case, the article home, the book home, whatever you're doing. And you're like, sorry, family, I'm out tonight. I got to get this stuff done. And you're doing it when you're exhausted. So the idea is align your best, most important tasks when you're at your best. And that's when you'll see exponential returns in your productivity.
I love that. So it's a very intentional, you know, methodology that you go about. But one of the things I remember you saying is, if you don't do it, people will tell you what you need to be doing.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And they're not trying to accomplish your highest priorities. They're trying to accomplish their own, right?
And that's the truth about priorities. Nobody will ever ask you to accomplish your top priorities. They will only ask you to accomplish theirs. And if you don't decide how to spend your time, other people will decide for you. And I'll give you a perfect example, really practical. We've all had days where there's no meetings on the calendar. And you think you're in heaven. You're like, this is going to be the most productive day ever. It's going to be amazing. And you sit down, maybe you get into the office early at 7:30. And I mean, you're working and you work for 8, 9, 10 hours. And at the end of the day, you got nothing crossed off your to-do list. In fact, it only grew. And I can promise you, I know what happened that day. You responded to everyone else's priorities because you started in your inbox. You're like, oh, I got to answer this. Then someone knocked on the door. It's like, hey, can you be in on this meeting with us? Okay, I'll go to that meeting. Then someone wants to have lunch. Then you got texts you have to return. Then it's this. You're fighting fires all day. Your priorities get abandoned. So that's why I suggest, if you look at your highest value added tasks, and even if you're a CEO or you're, you know, an entrepreneur, you have things about your job that you don't like. You're not very good at. So for me, it's routine admin, etc. I have staff for it. You can't delegate everything away. Do those least important tasks in your red zone. Do your most important tasks in your green zone, the stuff that really moves the needle in your company. Maybe it's meeting with clients. Maybe it's writing that quarterly report, planning new strategy. It could be listening to a podcast or reading a book that leads to a breakthrough in your business model. And then in your yellow zone, you can do everything in between. You can do the meetings. I'll give you another example that was a lot of fun. My other side of burnout, I'm like, I'm never burning out again. How do I avoid it? So read books, listen to podcasts, hired coaches, hired counselors, and I came up with this system, but it was personal. I never had any intention to write a book. And then within a few years of using the system, people started asking me, how do you get it all done? You're leading a church, you're writing a blog, you're podcasting, you're speaking around the world, and you have a better family life now. What are you doing? And I'm like, oh, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then finally, I'm like, wow, I'm getting asked this question all the time. So I started writing it down. And then I started teaching it. And I realized, oh, this works for other people. So, you know, I took a few years to systematize it and figure it out and make it accessible and the whole deal. One of the early consults I did was for a large organization in Atlanta, and they had about 80 staff. They took the teaching and they applied it. And I get an email about a month later and they're like, okay, wow, you wouldn't believe what we discovered. Even though it's a great organization, everybody hated a leadership team meeting. And they're like, these are good people. We're doing good work. Everyone hates a leadership team meeting. What they did is they compared everyone's green, yellow, and red zones and discovered that they were having the leadership team meeting during most people's red or yellow zones. I don't care what you're doing. I mean, you get a box seats at a Lakers game. If you're in the red zone and you're tired, you're going to hate it. Like, you're not going to get anything out of it.
Yes, that's right.
They moved it by 2 hours. Same people, didn't change anything else. They just moved it. And everybody started loving leadership team.
Radical difference. Wow. That's such a great story. But you got to figure it out. You got to spend the time with yourself. I always say, you got to schedule a meeting with yourself to actually figure out where your zones are. You know, you're talking about your optimal green zone, and you have these concentric circles. You're gifting, your passion, your impact. And the magic happens, obviously, when all of those things meet in the middle, right? You've got so much practical stuff here because you say, how do you know what your gifting is? Well, sometimes it's the questions that we can ask ourselves, right?
So gifting is pretty simple. And I borrowed this from a friend, Andy Stanley. What seems effortless for you that seems difficult for others? So back to where we started this podcast. I don't know why. I think it's a gifting. Communication has always been easy for me. I could talk on my feet when I was 12 years old. Not all quality words, I'll admit that, but you know, it wasn't hard. And I can give a 40-minute keynote at an event, which I do often, and it looks so easy. And it is, you know, I work, I prepare, I study, but it's just not that hard. And other people would say, you know, the Jerry Seinfeld joke, I would rather die than speak in public. So you go to a funeral and the guy giving the eulogy wishes he was in the coffin. Right? Because the number one fear is fear of public speaking.
Right.
Yeah. So for me, that's easy. Other times, like my wife plays piano. I have no idea. I tried. And when I see musicians who can play and sing at the same time, and then there are other people I know who just listen to a song and they pick it up and it's like, da, 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 da. That's gifting. Other people, it's spreadsheets. We have spreadsheet ninjas on our staff. It's incredible.
Yeah.
For other people, it's project management. I can envision a project. Don't give it to me to manage because we're going to miss deadlines. The caterer isn't going to show up, or we're going to have food for 200 and we needed food for 20. Other people ace that. So what seems effortless to you that is difficult for others? And then your passion. So that's your gifting. That's one circle. Second is your passion. What do you love doing? I love producing content. I love serving leaders. I love doing interviews. Okay, well, that's easy. But the third is impact. What moves the needle in your company? Because maybe you have a great hobby. Okay, I love smoking brisket. I'm not making money at smoking brisket. Okay, I love it. I'm good at it. My friends say I'm good at it. I enjoy it, but I don't see the business model.
Right.
Like, go do that in your spare time if you really love it. But what actually moves the needle? Is it that you're ignoring your clients and you really love serving your clients and you're good at retaining clients, but it's gotten so complicated in the company right now that you can't serve your top clients? Because it's way better to serve your top clients than to lose one and go out and find new ones. Maybe you need to do that in your green zone. So you've got to look at that. That impact is the third piece, because otherwise you got a nice theory, a nice hobby, or you're really enjoying your life. Meanwhile, you're going bankrupt.
So good. One of the things I think is really good too, is you said like your gifting, whatever your gifting is, develop that gifting
in your green zone.
So like you're a master communicator, but listen, there's always the next level. So you got to continue to work on getting better at that gifting, but do that in your green zone.
So I think there's sort of like a stage one, stage two of your green zone. Stage one, and again, I hope you get the book, but if you don't, you got enough from this interview already to go and make this change starting tomorrow. Wipe your green zone clean, cancel your meetings, protect the time, and just go do your most important work that you're actually good at. And you're going to go home and you're going to shock your family or the people you live with. And you're going to say, no, I'm finished for the day. And that'll blow you away. But once you get good at it, then what you can do, because if you have 3 or 4 hours a day of this, read a book on communication, read a book on strategy, read a book outside your industry, listen to a podcast, connect with another leader, go and develop yourself. Because as Malcolm Gladwell popularized in the book Outliers, the difference between a good person and a world-class person is 10,000 hours. That's what makes the difference between an NHL player, as he talked about in the book, and somebody who's just a good hockey player, 10,000 hours of practice. And as long as you got the gifting, it's actually the practice, the reps that are going to move you into world-class territory, or at least best in your field, best in your industry, best in your community. So there is a way to nurture clients that is better. And you will learn when you take the course or master the skills. And that's why, you know, one of the reasons we started the Academy is we know a lot of leaders don't have the time. They don't take the time. They have the time. That's another lie we address in the book.
Yeah, that's a lie, isn't it? Yeah.
You have the time. You just didn't take it, man. I got the time to write a book. I've got the time to run a marathon. I just didn't take it because we all get 24 hours in the day. But, you know, in the Academy, we've got courses where we train leaders in these things. I graduated law school. Nobody taught me how to run a law firm. I graduated from seminary. No one taught me how to run a church. So we try to help people with that and develop those skills inside the Academy that will take you to the next level of your leadership. And again, most people say, well, I don't have time for that. It's like, well, now you do.
That's fantastic. But Kiri, I have to ask you, this is called Something Extra. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
You need to find a sustainable pace. A lot of leaders are running at an unsustainable pace and they're heading for burnout, or they're in low-grade burnout right now. We keep looking for time off to heal us, but time off won't heal us because the problem is how we spend our time on. It's not the 2 weeks at the beach with palm trees and fruity drink or whatever. That is the problem. We know how to do that. But you get back on Monday, you get hit by a truck at 11 a.m. You're so busy, you're so tired. It is your day-to-day rhythm that needs to change. And the cure to an unsustainable pace is not more time off. It's how you spend your time on. So I think the something extra you need is a rhythm that is sustainable in your everyday life.
That's so good. Well, Kiri, I mean, we've talked about a lot of things. I'm so excited about the Art of the Leadership Academy. Tell people how they can find you, how they can find your podcast, and then we will let people get about their day here. So
sure, you bet. So I have an impossible to spell name, but if you Google Kiri Newhoff, you can look at the podcast. You'll find my website, KiriNewhoff.com. And then if you're interested in our premium resources, we try to make it a very accessible price point for solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, and church leaders. Just $397 a year for membership in the Art of Leadership Academy. You can get that at theartofleadershipacademy.com.
Such a small investment, really, Kiri, in yourself.
Yeah.
Well, Kiri, this has been so much fun. I wish we could talk for hours, but I know we both have other things to do. So thank you so much for making the time to be on the show. It's just been a delight.
It's been a joy. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.